I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. Craft beer is a $14 billion a year industry, and it's growing throughout the United States. Once a state lacking in the microbrew market, Florida is quickly becoming a craft beer heavyweight. To talk more about the rise in craft beer in Florida, I'll speak to brewers Ron Rake from Cask & Larder and Sky Connolly from Hourglass Brewery, as well as bar owners Brent Hernandez from Red Light Red Light and Tracy Chehoven from Rogue Pub. Later, I'll speak with Eric Criss. He's the president of the Beer Industry of Florida Incorporated, about legislation in Tallahassee that looks to regulate how independent brewers distribute their beer. The first, Intersection's assistant producer Brendan Byrne went to Cask & Larder's brewery to learn more about the process of beer making. That's ahead on Intersection.
If you walk through the bar at Cask & Larder Restaurant in Winter Park, you'll find a small brewery. When I went, I met Ron Rake. He was listening to Muddy Waters, and he was brewing beer. The process of making beer is thousands of years old. Archaeologists discovered evidence of beer making starting 7,000 years ago in ancient Egypt and Mesopotamia. Ron says the process of beer making hasn't changed much since.
Taking the seed of a grass plant called malted barley and wheat and some other specialty grains as well, but it goes through a long malting process.
He then cracks the grain open, extracts the sugar from the starch grain, boils it, adds hops, flash cools it, and then adds yeast. The yeast turns the sugar into alcohol.
And basically you have beer at that point.
While the process hasn't changed in thousands of years, the variety of beers and tastes of consumers have changed substantially. According to the Brewers Association, the trade group that represents small and independent American craft brewers, the craft beer industry grew 18% in 2013, which is about 15 million more barrels of beer. Craft beer is a $14 billion a year industry, and it's growing. Ron credits the rise of craft beer to the local sourcing movement.
But I think a lot of people's tastes are changing to where they want something local. And they're geared up to buy local and shop local as opposed to buying their beer from out of state.
Florida once lagged behind in the initial boom of the craft beer industry, but recent numbers from the Brewers Association show growth in the Sunshine State.
Just knowing that Florida has traditionally been a beer wasteland for all those years, we're just now coming around to seeing that big craft beer movement. So watching the state change over those years to become what it's become has been interesting for me to see that evolution.
Now, Florida is one of the fastest growing regions for craft beer brewing. Orlando is home to 5 breweries, but in comparison to neighboring cities along the I-4 corridor, there's still plenty of room for growth.
But in the city of Tampa, the greater city of Tampa area, there's upwards of 30 breweries, small and big. In Jacksonville, there's upwards of 17. Jacksonville's a big circle, but there's a lot of breweries up there. But in the Central Florida area, we're still on that cusp of growing and seeing more locally produced beers.
Brewers like Ron are working hard to give patrons great beer that steers them away from the macro brew operations and gets them to love craft beer. They work together to bring good beer to craft beer lovers.
As long as they're buying local and drinking local, that sort of thing, the locals win.
For Intersection, I'm Brendan Byrne.
Got my mojo working, but just don't work on you.
That was Intersection's assistant producer Brendan Byrne speaking with Ron Rake. Ron joins our panel of local brewers and bar owners to talk about the Florida craft beer industry, which is coming up next. I'm joined in the studio by brewers Ron Rake and Sky Connolly. Ron is the brewmaster at Cask & Larder in Winter Park. Skye is the brewer at the Hourglass Brewery in Longwood. Ron and Skye, thank you for joining me.
No problem. Thank you.
And also joining us in the studio, craft beer bar owners Brent Hernandez and Tracy Chehoven. Brent is the founder and co-owner of Red Light, Red Light in the Audubon Park neighborhood of Orlando. Tracy, the owner of Rogue Pub in Orlando. Brent and Tracy, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
So, first of all, Brent, the craft beer bar, Red Light, Red Light's been in the area for about 9 years. What kind of growth have you seen in the craft beer industry since you started your business?
Amazing growth. It's the amount of beer that's available to us now compared to 2005 when we started is astronomically more.
And is that sort of customer demand driven? Are you finding people coming in and demanding like this beer or that beer or asking if you can, you know, increase the range of things you have on tap?
Definitely.
Right. Do you think that, you know, now sort of 9 years on, there's obviously a bit more competition in the kind of craft beer market. Is that helpful for somebody, you know, who's been in this arena for some time?
Definitely. You know, it keeps you on your toes and you want to do something, you know, you always want to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't look at it like competition because we're pretty much friends with most everybody. The craft beer scene's pretty friendly one. So we don't look at it. It's not cutthroat. You know?
Right.
People that drink beer are typically friends.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, it's a good social lubricant, isn't it? You can sit down and have a beer with people. What about the idea of, you know, where you are? Because I know that, for example, Red Light used to be in a slightly different location, not too far away from where it is now. But how much of a change is that?
Yeah, we're in our third location now. And we've definitely grown in space with every location. Our last location was a bit of a destination. We didn't have a lot of stuff going on near us that would attract people.
Mm-hmm.
But we moved to more of a neighborhood and we get a lot of people walking, riding their bikes. And there's a lot of other like-minded businesses in the area that draw the same crowd. So,
Skye, I want to turn to you now. The Hourglass Brewery has been around for just about a year and a half. Why did you decide to open up a brewery here in Central Florida?
Pretty much a hobby gone awry. I think every home brewer has that kind of imagination, delusions that they can open a brewery someday. And
mm-hmm.
we were crazy enough to do it. And as the economy started tanking, we started planning. And 3 years later, it happened. And it went better than we thought.
What kind of things did you encounter along the way? I imagine that it's quite a step from being a home brewer, you know, cooking things up in your garage or wherever you have your setup to putting that onto a more kind of industrial scale and trying to serve more people day in, day out.
There is definitely a lot of fine-tuning going on when you scale up. Right at the point we're at, we scaled up 10 times the size. So there's a lot more fine-tuning in the recipe to get it to where it was. But then there's also a lot more fine-tuning you can do that you can't do on a homebrew level. It's just a lot of trial and error, a lot of experimenting, and a lot of insanity.
Your customers fairly forgiving people, or if you serve them a dud brewer, they can let you know?
We try not to serve them anything not palatable, and we have dumped a batch or two because I didn't think it was up to par. But yeah, they will not hold back any comments if, you know, this could be better, this could be hoppier, this could be sweeter.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no offense taken in that. It's a critique process for sure.
Well, let me turn to you, Ron. You've been in the professional brewing scene for a long time, 2 decades almost. What's your sort of take on the growth in this industry? Do you have a sort of a longer view? You see it sort of going up and down over those decades?
Well, I've always seen Florida as a beer wasteland for many years, and we finally kind of rounded that corner as California grew with many different beer styles. We finally started to see them in Florida. So it's taken a long time for that to happen, but we are, I feel, no longer a beer wasteland.
Why do you think it's taken so long for it to be transformed from a beer wasteland to what it is now?
Many variables, but I go back to being the Bible Belt. It's just hard to change the South from the way it was to the way it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also one of the highest per capita beer consumption states in the country. So we've been drinking probably the wrong beer for many years, and we finally rounded that corner to where we're drinking more crafts and more local stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and are you seeing some of that flow back into what people who would have traditionally had the corner on the beer market here in Florida are now starting to do in terms of moving, like bigger brewers moving more into that sort of craft beer space?
I think they're trying. They're trying every angle they can because they're losing foothold in the macro beers or the 7-Eleven beers, as I call them. So they're trying those angles and actually buying out the some of the regional breweries that are growing and trying to attack it at that angle.
Sky, I just wanted to come back to you for a question. The process of becoming a brewer here in Central Florida and being able to legally produce beer, how tricky is that?
If you do it on your own, it's very tricky. It took us about 9 months to be federally approved. We were all working full-time jobs at the time, so when the TTB wants something else, we'll get around to it next week. This time, we're moving to a bigger location, so this time we have a lawyer doing it for us. And they have a 90-day window to approve anything. So at day 89, they need something else. You get it to them, that resets the whole 90-day window, and it snowballs into paying a lot of bills for a building that doesn't provide any money yet.
Mm-hmm. Is that something you anticipated leading into this?
No. It took us we thought we would be open in 3 months. It took us almost a year.
Mm-hmm. And is that partly just because of that legal process, getting that all sort of lined up?
Yeah. Yeah, you can't brew anything until you've been approved. You can make a whole lot of water, but no beer.
What do you think would make that simpler? And I guess I'm going to ask the other folks on the panel, but do you think as somebody fairly new to the process, there are some kind of quick fixes for streamlining that?
A lawyer definitely helps. They're very attentive. Having more staff approve applications on a federal level would definitely help as well. The local city and state doesn't take very long. It's the federal. That's the waiting game.
Mm-hmm.
So if they had more staff approving documents and you pay for a lawyer to do it for you, it goes a lot quicker.
Well, Tracy, now the Orlando Weekly described your bar as a, quote, South Orlando blue-collar neighborhood that meets fancy beer. What kind of clientele are you seeing trying and drinking craft beer? Is it still kind of a slightly hipstery thing, or is it becoming a little more widespread?
So I think it's a little bit more widespread. And like Brett said, you know, being a neighborhood, you get a lot more foot traffic. You get people coming through, you know, that are going home rather than, you know, just getting off of work and, you know, looking for a place to go have, you know, a couple of drinks after work with their buddies. You know, this is it's a neighborhood bar. And, you know, we're in a neighborhood too. There's a lot of blue collar workers. It's a middle class, you know, neighborhood. But we pretty much attract, I mean, just about everybody, young, old, black, white, every kind of walk of life comes through there. And we get the people that, you know, we'll just drink a domestic beer because we have a very limited selection because we are in a neighborhood where that is kind of necessity. But I think the coolest part of our job is getting people to kind of switch gears and, you know, maybe they drink, you know, a domestic lager, you know, from one of the macro brews, but now we can kind of switch them over to some local stuff. And I think that's probably for us one of the cooler experiences is getting people to kind of, you know, cross over the dark side. So
mm-hmm. The gateway.
What sort of goes into that educating people on, look, this isn't the kind of beer that you're just going to be able to pop the tab and gurgle it down in like 20 seconds?
Yeah, I think it really is. I mean, a lot of it is communication, and you have to talk to your customers. And, you know, sometimes it's a kind of a chess game about what they like, what they don't like. And, you know, when you have a multitude of things on draft, you can get them to sample things and kind of tell you or pick out what they like or what they don't like about a particular beer. And, you know, usually we can kind of navigate them in the right direction to find something that they will like. And it's really weird because just the other day we had somebody that just, you know, was drinking just domestic stuff, and we actually turned them on to a sour, which was one of kind of the weirdest transitions. But, you know, you'd be surprised, you know, when people say that, you know, oh, I don't like that kind of beer, but or I only drink a certain kind of beer, but then they've never tried anything else. So, you know, it's just getting them to try it and get out of that comfort zone. And, mm-hmm. you know, you'd be surprised what people really like. So,
Ron, if I could come back to you, there's also alongside the craft beer movement, if we can call it that, there seems to be a bit of a drive to eat local, for people to go find restaurants that source ingredients from local farms and kind of artisanal products. Is this kind of a synergy? Do you find that people are going for like kind of local food and trying to find beers to match that?
Well, I feel the trend is towards that local economy. A good example is you've got three brewers on your panel that make up three of the five breweries in Orlando. So getting a fresher product, getting something that's sourced locally, a lot of times I know Sky and Brent will use local ingredients to flavor their beers with, and it's providing income for local farmers. It's supporting the local economy. The tax money stays locally and that sort of thing. But, yeah, to source the local ingredients as much as possible to feed the locals the local stuff, I think it's a good thing.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm joined by a panel of brewers and bar owners to talk about Orlando's craft beer scene. You can join the conversation online on Facebook or Twitter. You can also send an email to intersection@wmfe.org. Well, Brent, in terms of what you serve at Red Light, what's the kind of proportion of what's local and what might come from out of state?
Definitely lean heavier on out of state, out of the country. For us, quality is number one. Mm-hmm. And so some might be local, may not be the best possible product that we could provide. We do have Sky was talking about sour beers earlier. We have a pretty huge selection of that, and a lot of that comes from overseas.
Just talking about distribution, because there obviously is a bit going on up in Tallahassee at the moment. We have Senate Bill 7120, the so-called Growler Bill. Now, that was introduced to provide a way for craft beer brewers to sell their beer to consumers. However, since its introduction, it looks to further restrict the selling of craft beer in Florida, and some say it's actually going to benefit those distributors and hurt the smaller beer operations. Ron, if I could just turn back to you. This is kind of complex for somebody who's not really involved in the industry, so how does it actually work? Like, what's the kind of difference between the what the distributors are doing and what the more local brewers are doing?
Unfortunately, I have a brewery to run, so I'm not abreast of all the details of this, but I think the gist of it is the distribution loop is left out when you fill a growler, because when you fill the growler, it usually happens or should happen at the manufacturer side, and it goes out from that location, and the distributor is not allowed to touch it, and they don't get any revenue out of it. So I think that with that portion being skipped, the opposition to this is the distribution side, and they want to fight that so that maybe there can be some growlers out there, but they want their share of it. They want their mm-hmm. cut out of it. And once again, I know there's some other smaller details in that bill, but I'm not sure exactly of all of them.
Brent, what do you think? Do you think from a sort of macro standpoint, I know that some people are saying, well, look, if big distributors are kind of trying to get involved in this, it's going to crowd out the little guy. But I'm wondering if maybe the opposite is true and that just because there's so much interest in craft beer, it's going to make it better for everybody in the long run.
I think it will make it better for everybody in the long run. There are a lot of little distributors out there now. More and more are opening up, and I think certain breweries are going to work better with them as opposed to the larger breweries.
Sky, I'm wondering, kind of listening to this talk about what's happening in Tallahassee and kind of possible problems down the track, does it give you a little bit of trepidation as to what you're getting into at this point?
Yeah, at the moment we haven't distributed anything yet. We haven't bottled anything, but this bill will definitely affect us soon. Every brewery that has a tap room sells their bottles out of their tap room, and this bill would pretty much bring a middleman into that now. For you to sell your own bottles in a tap room, you would have to sell it to a distributor, and then they sell it back to you, and then you sell it to your customers, which is kind of like a mobster kind of mentality.
Right. Would it have to actually leave the property?
No, they don't even have to touch it.
Okay.
It's just a check exchange.
Mm-hmm. Florida's a three-tier state, so we have to go through from manufacturing to distribution to retail. But with these tasting rooms, the idea is it goes right out to retail from there if it's produced at the manufacturer. For instance, a bar, like at Rogue Pub, you couldn't get a growler filled. You'd have to go to a manufacturer in the state of Florida to do it, like at Cigar City or Swamp Head in Gainesville. I think Orlando Brewing is the only location in Orlando that does legal growler fills right now.
And Florida doesn't even have the standard growler size to begin with. Mm-hmm. So let's just address that one issue and leave the strings out with all these other things and work at it one at a time. In the beginning, we felt victorious that we're getting half-gallon growlers legalized. And then all these other issues came out, and now hands are up in the air screaming. Mm-hmm. Keep your half gallons if this is how it's going to go, kind of thing.
And a note for our listeners, a growler is a refillable 64-ounce beer bottle. I imagine there's a pretty strong sort of home brewing scene? So people would be, you know, swapping beer and that sort of thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, is there any call or any thought of regulating that from Tallahassee too, do you think?
Because a lot of actual politicians are homebrewers too. I mean, our president's a homebrewer. So
right.
if that were to happen, it would hit the fan.
Mm-hmm. The craft beer movement has kind of, it seems to be still growing at the moment. Ron, do you see it sort of plateauing? Do you think it's going to keep going strong here in Florida?
If anybody's ever been to San Diego, they'll see a brewery on just about every street corner. And I think there will be that plateau someday, maybe for California. But in Florida, I think there's so much room to grow. Tampa right now has close to 30 breweries in the greater Tampa area. And in Jacksonville, they have close to 17 breweries. So like I said before, the five we have in Orlando, there's definitely room to grow. We're in the planning stages of a production facility for us. Sky is building a bigger brewery for Hourglass across the street. Brent, maybe someday we'll get a bigger kettle.
Just starting.
But he just started. So there's definitely room to grow in Florida, and I think we're in the infancy of seeing things happen in the Central Florida area.
And Sky, just kind of circling back to what your plans are, obviously some expansion in the pretty near future. You must be fairly positive about the future of the local beer scene here in Orlando.
Yeah, definitely. I know of quite a few breweries that are planning on opening up soon, and the more the merrier. And I'm just excited to be able to move to a location where we can finally keep up.
Well, I've been speaking to Sky Conley. Sky is the brewer at the Hourglass Brewery in Longwood. Sky, thanks for joining us.
Cheers.
We've also been speaking to Tracy Chehoven. She is the owner of Rogue Pub in Orlando. Tracy, thank you very much for coming in.
Well, thank you for having us.
And we've been speaking also to Brent Hernandez. Brent is the founder and co-owner of Red Light in the Audubon Park neighborhood of Orlando. Brent, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we've also been joined, of course, by Ron Rake. He is the brewmaster at Cask and Larder in Winter Park. Ron, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Cheers.
Up next, a conversation with Eric Criss, president of the beer industry of Florida, about legislation in Tallahassee that looks to regulate how independent brewers distribute their beer. Joining me from Tallahassee by phone is Eric Criss. He's the president of the Beer Industry of Florida. It's a trade association for some of Florida's beer distributors, with brands including domestic beers like Coors, Miller, Sam Adams, and Tampa's Cigar City label. Eric, thanks for joining me.
Yes, thank you, Matthew. Happy to be here, and I'm always happy to talk beer.
Well, we are too, and we'd like to talk to you about this Senate bill. What's the latest with the bill, Eric, and where does this look like it's heading?
Well, there are several bills. The Senate bill that was heard in the Rules Committee is actually Senate Bill 1714, mm-hmm. and there was an amendment to that, what they call in the legislature a strike-all amendment, which essentially replaced the bill with all new language. That strike-all passed, and our association did not support the strike-all because we felt it was too restrictive on small brewers and their ability to sell at retail, meaning their ability to sell to the public who might come in to their brewery, enjoy a beer, and want to buy a six-pack in order to take home. And so we had supported the bill in the past, but we did not support the strike-all and the new language. And we believe there's, you know, a way forward and some possible compromise. I don't know if that's going to get done this session. With only 2 weeks left, it might be better for everybody to try to get together this summer and find a new way forward. Because what we have right now is currently the small brewers are operating in an unrestricted way in the retail tier. And that's promoting a vertical integration in the industry. And vertical integration has long been a problem recognized by public health experts as promoting oversaturation of our society in alcohol. It promotes more points of access, it promotes wider, much wider supply and oversaturation. And these are the kind of things that eventually what we see, and we've seen this in history, is you start to have too much underage access. You start to have more and more cases of public health issues like cirrhosis of the liver, fetal alcohol syndrome. And so as an industry, what we want to do is keep some reasonable regulations in place.
What do you think the craft brewers would say, though, to these the suggestion that, you know, vertical integration would have some public health implications? I'm just wondering because, you know, the image of craft beer now is it's maybe a little pricier. People are kind of going for flavor rather than, you know, trying to drink as much as possible. I just wonder if that doesn't seem to square with the image of craft brewing as it stands at the moment.
Here's the thing. When we legislate and regulate, we can't single out expensive craft beers as the only ones being allowed to have these retail privileges. So the worry of public health folks and the history tells us that over time, the more and more craft brewers and more supply that we have, the more danger we run with this increasing number of points of public access. Look, craft brewers benefit from this three-tier system. Small brewers that maybe are $10 million a year, and that's I'm talking about the biggest ones in Florida, they cannot afford $200-300 million to get their beer all over the state. Mm-hmm. So most of them will tell you that they appreciate what beer distributors do, and they find it a good partnership.
Right. So essentially, it looks now like with only 2 weeks or something to go in this session, we're not even going to get anything which will allow the craft brewers to sell their product in the 64-ounce growlers this year, right?
Yes, I think that's correct. And at the Beer Industry of Florida, we think it's unfortunate that we couldn't at least pass a 64-ounce growler. Mm. We believe the 64-ounce container is something that the small brewer should have, and we believe there are other issues to fix in the system, but we don't believe that the growler should be used as leverage against small brewers to try to get them to give up these other things, which we believe are real challenges and problems to the system, but which don't need to be tied to the 64-ounce container.
Mm-hmm. So we're heading towards a beer summit sometime in the summer, you think, at this point?
That's what we're calling on everyone to help us convene. We want to get Miller Coors distributors, Anheuser-Busch distributors, big brewers, small brewers. We want to get everybody in a room, and we want to try to get something hammered out. It's really not fair for us to take a food fight to the legislature. The senators and representatives don't appreciate that, and while certainly it's their job to craft the bill, we can come together on the key points that will help them put something together that gets passed and that is good for everybody. And we're going to put a lot of pressure on people to come to the table this summer and get something like that negotiated.
I've been speaking to Eric Criss. He is the president of the Beer Industry of Florida Incorporated. It's a trade association for Florida's beer distributors, that one of the two major beer distributing networks in the state. Eric, thank you very much for speaking to me.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Matthew. Appreciate it very much.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.